It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in our Phoenix, Arizona. We're starting to get warm, but it's still not as hot as it usually is. Lack of global warming. You know, one thing that we're going to get on today, as soon as we get Julian Heiklin on, I want to tell you this story. Julian is, I got you there, Julian. You ready?
Yep, I'm here.
I got to tell this story. You know, this is for you and everybody. Julian is a chemistry professor at Penn State University, and this is how I knew who you were and that you existed. Years ago, I got a call from CBS News, was trying to get hold of you, and they just did like a libertarian search on the internet, and for some reason my name came up, and they go, hey, do you know this Julian guy? And I go, you know what? I know who does. My mother-in-law worked at Penn State University. My wife went to Penn State University 4 years, and my mother-in-law went there, and she would tell me about this crazy professor that would go out on the front lawn on, I guess, April 20th and light up a marijuana cigarette, okay? Now, she's talking about you, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't right on April 20th. I did it every Thursday for 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
So
I got arrested 5 times.
So she was telling me about this, and I'm like, wow, that sounds cool. She was just telling me about it. I don't know when it was, but definitely enough times that she knew who you were. So I got...
What is your mother-in-law's name?
Rose Pachala. Rose, she would work in... I'm sorry?
Yeah, where'd she work?
You know, I don't know. You know, she was involved in a lot of stuff. She worked there so the tuition was cheaper for her daughter to be able to go there. And they lived right behind Beaver Stadium there. Well, what she did is she was telling me about this. So when CBS News called me, looking for, I said, you know, do me a favor. Call this person here. And it's my mother-in-law has CBS News calling, wanting to know the number of the professor, you know, that's out smoking marijuana. So I just got to tell you that story, man. That's how I knew who you were. And years later, we see that, you know, you do this on a regular basis. And now you've come to the attention of the authorities because you're going to the federal courthouse handing out fully informed jury information, and they're arresting you. Now, what I want you to do, Julian, is go ahead and give me your history, how it is. I look at your bio here. I'd spend the whole show just reading all the organizations and groups that you belong to, and I can see a theme here. It's you're resistant against the man. So tell me, how did that happen? Where did you start that?
Well, it started when I was sick once in high school, and my uncle, who was sort of a freedom fighter in his own right, sent me a copy of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. That was got me all excited about this. And then I went to Cornell University to become an engineering nerd, but I had complicated the situation because I read Victor Hugo's book on Les Miserables, and then I read Ayn Rand's book on the Fountainhead, and that transformed me completely from an engineering nerd into a raving maniac for freedom.
And, well, you were a chemistry professor at Penn State, weren't you? I mean, it's not like you dropped out, you know?
Yep.
So you're well-educated.
Technically, I still am. I'm professor emeritus. I mean, I still have all the professorial rights and privileges there.
Well, how old are you now?
I'm 78.
Okay, and this is, you've been going hardcore for at least a decade that I know of. So I'm, how is it that you transitioned it? I mean, you know you're going to get arrested. You know that you're, you know, challenging the man. You know that you're making a point. What is the point you're trying to make?
Well, the basic point is that some of these laws are just unconstitutional and that there is no reason for them. And the idea is to get into the courts and get them thrown out, if not by the judge, by a jury, which is the whole idea of the jury nullification thing, is that the jury is not obligated to uphold the law. The jury is obligated to see that justice is done. And there have been many cases where that has succeeded.
I've had
a number of laws overturned. There was a municipal ordinance in State College against using a bullhorn, an electronic bullhorn, which I was using, and I was arrested for that once. And the judge declared that the municipal law was unconstitutional and threw the case out. And I sued the city, and they gave me $8,000.
They just love you, I'm sure.
That's an example of when that happened. As far as the marijuana things go, I smoked every time for 3 years. They arrested me 5 times. And finally, the chief judge of the Center County Court ordered that I was never to be arrested and brought into court again. I had absolute immunity.
Okay, now let's talk about that a little bit. One, why would you, I would imagine you had tenure, or were you already retired?
Actually already retired. I mean, emeritus is the word. I mean, I'm retired in the sense that I don't have any obligations and I don't draw a salary, but I had an office and all the privileges, parking privileges and everything else that any other faculty member would have, and I still have them.
So when you go to Penn State, you're out there, and is at the same time every Thursday? I mean, what was your schedule?
It was lunch hour every Thursday.
So you go out there, and you just light it up, and you had supporters? There are students that were like...
Many. I wasn't the only one who was lighting up. And this was, you know, State College is a small town, and so there was an enormous amount of publicity. There's a student newspaper in the town newspaper, and that's basically it, plus, you know, that some local TV stations and radio stations, but so that, you know, this was a big thing in the town. In fact, all the big movements in the United States start in small towns. If you do this stuff in New York, nobody notices it. You know, in Washington, D.C., they have marches of tens of thousands of people every day, usually several of them at once. You know, they never even make the news. They're just routine. Same thing in Washington. In New York, I'm locked in a medical marijuana march, 30,000 of us. No, it never made any of the news stations. It's just not news in the big cities. But you notice that the evolution, the theory was in Dayton, Tennessee. The Advanced Dominions were in Waco, Texas. There was the guys up at Ruby Ridge, Idaho, on the mountain. The Montgomery bus boycott was in Montgomery, Alabama. The lunch counter sit-in started in some small town in North Carolina, because these things are news in those places, and they finally get national attention.
So,
our work at Penn State and State College got instantaneously, I mean, within a week or two, Associated Press has sent us all over the world. I was getting letters and emails from all over the world. People were sending me money from all over the world.
No, it got our attention.
We started this in January. In May, I was the High Times Freedom Fighter of the Month.
Only 1 month?
Well, it's not 1 month, January to May.
Now, the question that I have is, you're doing this, and you're going to court. They're finally starting to cite you. You're having, was it campus police? Was it State College police? Who was giving you citations or arresting you for smoking marijuana? And what was the charge that they charged you with?
Okay, well, we went out there with the intent of getting arrested. The idea being we were going to go to court and ask for a jury nullification, ask the jury to nullify the law. We went out there the first time, and I started smoking, and nothing happened. Except that it happened that both the campus newspaper editor and the reporter from the city newspaper were on their lunch hour and happened to walk by. We were in the middle of downtown State College, but no police came. So one of my buddies called the police and said, this guy is smoking marijuana. So they sent a policeman out, and I'm sitting there in a chair. It was the middle of winter, and my coat and blanket and smoking away. And the police officer came over to me and said, you know, that's not permitted. Don't do it again. And he left. So,
well, that didn't work out.
We wanted to get arrested.
No, we're going to get there. We come back, Julian. We'll talk about when you did and what happened in the court and how you've transitioned into focusing on fully informed juries. And then young men that are even photographing you doing that are getting arrested for photographing you. Oh,
that's
it's getting
right.
bad, and you've seen it happen. Go tell us all about it here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need you. I've got to break free.
God knows. God knows. Oh, we got to, we just want to break free. Now, Julian, we got Julian Heichlin. He is professor emeritus from Penn State University, a chemistry professor there that's been, you know, fighting for freedom for a long time. He's involved in, you know, libertarian politics. He's involved in a lot of different organizations. And his main thing is, I got nothing better to do than go out and advocate for freedom. You know, let's do that. Well, there's a YouTube that we have up on today's show. You go to Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, and you see today's show for this afternoon with Julian. And you'll see a video up there of him passing out information. And you got federal marshals, I guess, that they come out and they say, what is it that you're passing out? You're not allowed to pass out. Well, this is what we're passing out. Well, tell me what you're passing out. Well, read it. It's right there. It says, you know, juries have the right to nullify the law. I mean, you know, here in Arizona, they acknowledge that right, but they will not tell the juries it. In some states, I think like Maine, they have the obligation to tell the jurors that they do have the ability to say this law is bad or it's misapplied and say not guilty for whatever reason they want. Here in Arizona, they acknowledge they have the right, but they don't tell them. They don't want you to be told. But you start going in some states, like New York, you start passing it out on the courthouse steps. They don't like it none too much. So let's go ahead and transition from you're doing this as, you know, marijuana laws, you know, it's dumb, and you're going to attack it with an informed jury saying, you know what, it's just how they got rid of a lot of prohibition was just, you know, not guilty, okay? Got rid of slavery, not guilty. So this is the tactic that you're trying here, but you get arrested or you get citations the first time you tried it. They said, don't do this anymore. Then you come back again. How many times did you have to come back in the clock tower there at Penn State University before they'd arrest you or cite you?
It took us 4 shots before they arrested us. 4
and what,
tries.
And what did they charge you with?
They charged you with possession of marijuana.
Okay, so then you go to court and you say, not guilty. What happened?
Well, we had a trial, and it turned out that, in fact, what they tested for was the main ingredient of marijuana, which is tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the drug part of the thing. Only the state law in Pennsylvania says that tetrahydrocannabinol is not a constituent of marijuana. And there's a reason why this was put in the law, because tetrahydrocannabinol is a legal prescription medicine. But, and that's what they tested for. So our claim was that they didn't test for anything that was illegal. And we asked the judge to read the law to the jury, and he refused to read the law. But the jury came in with a guilty verdict in any event. An appeal, we couldn't get it reversed. But as a matter of fact, I was put on probation and fined, but I never served the probation and never paid the fines, mostly because the legal system is so messed up that they didn't execute the warrants correctly. And I finally got them thrown out.
Wow. Okay, that's one. Then, you know, you had four others. I mean, at what point did the judge and for what reason did he say, just leave Julian alone, I'm tired of dealing with him? I mean, how did that come about?
Because I'd always go limp. They'd have to drag me in. I'd always drag out all these court cases. In the end, they always made some mistake, like I've explained to you with this case, so that even though they win the cases, I mean, they can never affect the punishment because they're so used to being sloppy that they just never do it right.
So you're challenging the entire system at every level you can.
That's right. Now, with the current situation, first of all, I've been involved with the Fully Informed Jury Association for many years. When I lived in Pennsylvania, I was their Pennsylvania representative. But the reason I've gotten reinterested in this now in the last year is I was arrested at a demonstration across from the UN when the president of Iran was speaking there. And that case has now been, the criminal case has been thrown out. I've sued the New York City police in the U.S. District Court. And then I saw the rules of the U.S. courts are that they send me what's going to happen. And it says, the judge is obligated to inform the jury that it must uphold the law as he gives it. And that just waved a red flag in front of me. I said, I won't go for that. So that's when I went and started passing out this literature in front of the U.S. District Court in Manhattan. It turns out that on federal property, Homeland Security has regulations where it's illegal to pass out literature or to take photographs unless you have a permit from them.
Wow.
And of course, I wouldn't get a permit.
Well, let's go ahead.
I've been arrested 11 times. This is on federal property. I don't think the states have anything like this. It's only at federal courts. But I've been arrested now 10 times in Manhattan and once in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Okay, let's go ahead.
I've been to 15 courts so far.
Julian, let's go ahead and play this part, this YouTube, and it reads the pamphlet. All it is a piece of paper, and this is what it says on it.
The judge will instruct the jury that it must uphold the law as he gives it. He will be lying. The jury must judge the law as well as the facts. Juries were instituted to protect people from the tyranny of government. It is not the duty of the jury to uphold the law. It is the jury's duty to see that justice is done.
Now here's a U.S. Marshal coming out, wanting to talk to you, passing it out. So he looks at the paper.
What are you guys handing out? Can I ask you what you're handing out?
You got it in your hand.
Well, I'm asking you to explain it to me.
It's jury information.
For what? For what?
For jurors. Information about being a juror.
Okay, well, that actually comes from the clerk's office here.
Oh, that comes from the man. You're not allowed to give out information that doesn't come official stamp from the man. I mean, is this their argument?
Their argument is even simpler than that. They just claim you can't pass out literature and you can't take pictures on federal property.
There's
don't care what it is.
There's a young man, I think he's one of the, you know, like We Are Change guys in New York. I met him when I was in New York speaking at a libertarian function there. And I met him again a couple of weeks ago at Porcupine Festival in New Hampshire. And he has a little camera. He knew you were out there. So he goes out with his little video camera and starts taking video. And they arrest him. What they didn't know is that he also had a little, you know, like one of those little tie clip things that does video and audio too. Well, they didn't get that. And they got it all on tape and they going through. Tell us about that case, you know. Why, you know, I can see, yeah. Go ahead and tell us the circumstances under which, how you were arrested and him, and the technique of you going limp.
Okay, well, first of all, he was out there taking pictures of me and the confrontation with the police, and then as you explained what happened, the police said no, they seized his camera, and he finally talked to them, they took the film out and gave him the camera back. But meanwhile, as you say, he was able to photograph what was going on, and he has several times, but they arrested him at that time for taking pictures and refusing to leave. He's has a case now. He sued also in the federal district court. The New York Civil Liberties Union is handling his case, is defending him, though I recently, and I've also sued Homeland Security, I recently got a notice from the judge that they're going to combine our cases. I don't know what that whether I don't know whether that's a final order or just a suggestion on his part yet.
I mean, I don't really see how they're really combined. I mean, you're out there, you know, passing out pamphlets, and he came to photograph or videotape you doing that, and they're going to put them together. We're going to talk about that when we come back, because this Homeland Security, well, we're going up against a break here, Julian. We'll be right back with you. And this whole Homeland Security, we rule you, how far, how much, for what? And then, of course, what's the evidence against you? Well, it's a fully informed jury stuff. Are they going to introduce that to the court and let the jury look at what they didn't want them to look at? That's happened before. Oh, lots to talk about. You stay right there. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Oh, the man be coming around when Julian's around. I tell you that. Julian has had a lot of experience with the man. Now, the charges that you're facing now, since the Patriot Act, they have changed. We control the federal courthouse because we can. Okay, so you're out there, you're saying, nope, I'm going to pass it out, come get me. And then you go, and I've been following you for a long time on this, and they're getting to the point, they're going, he is fighting for freedom so much, he must be crazy, we have to take him to Bellevue. How far off am I?
No, that's right. I've been sent to Bellevue several times, and they claim that, you know, I've got to have psychiatric exams. Usually I've been to now Bellevue and two other hospitals six times, and once in Springfield. Seven times I've been hospitalized now at the psychiatric wards, and they usually let me go and tell me I should go to a psychiatric clinic. And the last time in Bellevue, they sent me there, but I didn't even see a psychiatrist. But the examination consists of, they called my wife, and they asked if I had psychiatric problems. And my wife, being a faithful, good wife, lied and said I wasn't crazy.
Yeah, really? I'm not sure what my wife
meant. She didn't divulge the information that I'm a carrier of insanity.
So now you're going
to... Then they released me.
You know, this
is... That was a psychiatric exam. But meanwhile, the place is sort of a torture chamber. I mean, they beat on your chest, they pinch my fingers, they stuff stuff up my nose, they lock me in a sleep-deprived room, they throw me, four guys throw me down, and they give me a shot of Thorazine to knock me out. Then they do things to my body, I don't even know what they are. I think they take x-rays and who knows what else. I mean, this is what might be called extraordinary rendition. Only it turns out it's not extraordinary.
I know, that's what's sad. You know, the one thing that I remember, see, I was born in 61, graduated high school in 79, and that means that, you know, a different generation. My generation grew up knowing from the beginning, the first thing on the news was, you know, Vietnam, Watergate, and so on. My generation grew up knowing the government was not the good guys. So we're in a different situation. Younger people now, especially with examples that you present, they know we got problems. Well, the one thing that I remember in junior high, so this had to be mid-70s, they were making the argument that the Soviet Union was bad, because if you fought for freedom, if you didn't toe the party line, if you didn't advocate for socialism, you were crazy, and they put you in re-education camps. They put you in psychiatric evaluations to find out what was wrong with you. And I'm seeing exactly the same thing they're doing now with you. I mean, you have to recognize this this parallel, don't you?
I understand that it's not just me. I've been told by other lawyers that this is now fairly routine. When they arrest people, they send them to psychiatric wards. And the reason, one of the reasons I think is, you see, the things that I'm violating aren't really crimes. They're not misdemeanors or felonies. They're similar to parking tickets. In other words, the penalty for what I'm doing is a $100 fine. So the proper thing, if they make an arrest for a crime, is to take you to a magistrate. But they can't do that. So what they do is they take these people and they send them to hospitals. But this has become fairly routine now. I mean, these psychiatric wards of hospitals are filled with people that the police have arrested, and they send them to the hospital either for legitimate reasons or because they can't take them in front of a magistrate. I mean, I'm not charged with a crime that a magistrate will look at.
So are you experiencing conversations with people that are just in limbo there? I mean, they're like, I'm missing my family, kids, children, save me, help me get out of here, or what?
You mean in the hospitals?
Yeah, because they were didn't respect the authority of an officer. You know, I hear stories about this all the time.
Well, you know, a lot of those people that are in the psychiatric ward, I understand why they're there, and it's hard to carry on a reasonable conversation with them.
Are there any people that are sane? I mean, you were there.
Yeah, there probably are. I mean, and usually when people are arrested, they don't want to discuss their crimes. It's sort of a rule. You don't ask somebody what they've done. If they're willing to tell you, that's one thing, but you don't probe into it. Most people are embarrassed about why they're arrested. I'm proud of it.
No. You've made that clear. Now, let's talk about their effort to try and combine somebody photographing what you were doing. I mean, I'm sure he knows who you are and so on, but they're not really connected.
Oh, yeah. He knows who I am. In fact, he's the backbone of my organization. He's organizing all the publicity and everything.
Right on. Well, yeah, no, we get a feed. I mean, we know what's going on, and it's been really difficult. I'm glad we finally got hold of you. I mean, you're not the easiest guy in the world to get hold of.
I don't understand it. Yeah, well, it actually is fairly easy. Just type my name into Google.
Well, I had to get that.
No problem at all.
All right. Well, it's hard to get you to get hold of me. The one thing that I wanted to make sure you made clear to the audience was the impact that you have on the people that are actually arresting you. Because you have an elderly gentleman there. I mean, you're in your late 70s. You're, you know, an intelligent, well-informed individual that has a clear mission that you're on. You have a pamphlet that's, you know, we just heard it read. I mean, it's you know, all of maybe, you know, 30 words. And it is just, you know, FYI, so you need to know, you're wanting to make a point. And the thing is that these men come out to arrest you, and how do you respond? What do you do?
Well, as soon as anybody places me under arrest, I fall to the ground and I don't move a muscle or talk until I'm released. That means all the way through, they call the ambulance, the hospital, the whole bit. When they announce that I'm released, then I talk, get up, and leave. Until then, I don't do no physical motion and no vocal sounds.
Why?
Because that's not resisting arrest, that's just not cooperating arrest. If you do anything else, you're resisting arrest, which is a crime.
Yeah, no, I've seen this.
I just don't cooperate with an arrest.
I've seen this before. In fact, we had an incident. It was a well-respected gentleman, an engineer, that it was just officers just being stupid, and it became a big, giant thing, and this is what happened. They got up behind him. He didn't respect their authority enough or something. He just, you know, was going shopping and just ignored some officer being stupid. And they tackled him. They put him to the ground. They ground his nose into the asphalt until it got raw. It was bleeding. They took his arm and twisted it up behind his back so much that he was forced to struggle out of pain. And the whole time they were screaming, "Stop resisting arrest. Stop resisting arrest," as they emptied a pepper spray in his mouth. So I'm going, wow, we had a field day with that. I mean, we were all over that one for a long time, and eventually it went away. But they will, I mean, it's good that you have a video camera on you, because just going limp, I mean, if they got a knee in your back and, you know, hurting you and you're moving at all, they got to do start screaming, stop, resist, and arrest. They do whatever the heck they want, and they say whatever they want. How many times have you gone to court where the officer that would testify lied? Have they ever lied?
Well, the depositions are always lies. It's not the question of have they ever lied. It's they never tell the truth. Now, none of these things have got to court yet, except the cases. None of the criminal cases have gone to court. I mean, usually they wind up dismissing them. But as far as the civil cases go, I've got a civil case against the New York City police. And not only did the police lie, I mean, the judge lied. I mean, it's... there's nothing in the justice system where any of those people care anything about the truth whatsoever.
What kind of impact do you have on the gentlemen that are arresting you? You would have to think, especially after the third, fourth, fifth time they're going, they're having to lie, they're not telling the truth, they're, you know, taking down an elderly gentleman that's fighting for his rights, it's sharing simple information that's truthful, by the way. And they, and you, it has to have some kind of an impact on them. It's kind of like the Gandhi thing. I mean, you know, it's not so much that you have to resist, you just got to put a mirror up to their face and show them for what they are.
Okay, let me tell you what this, it varies from situation to situation. In Manhattan, the officers feel that they are saving the country by keeping me from passing out literature, and they take their job very seriously, and they have, the officers themselves have not mistreated me. The mistreatment starts when I get into the ambulance with the medic.
Really?
And yep.
Let's go ahead and hold it right there. They're going to push the button on us here, Julian. So just hold it right there. We got right. Julian Heiklin from, well, Fully Informed Jury activist. I mean, he's going, doing what all of us should be. Somebody's got to do it, and I'm supporting him. We'll be talking to Julian some more when we come back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Julian, am I saying your last name right? Heiklin, is that how you say it?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, now you were saying, you know, they got you down on the ground. You're not allowed to, you know, tell people what they should know already. And we sure as heck aren't going to tell them. We don't want you to tell them. So we're going to take you down. We're going to put you in the ambulance. And then you say, and the ambulance is when the abuse starts. Tell me about that.
That's right. The physical abuse starts in the ambulance. First of all, let me tell you about the police officers. The 10 times in New York, it's obvious that the officers are very angry. They weren't the first time. They're angry that I keep coming back, but they don't physically mistreat me. They're not very pleasant about it, but there's no physical mistreatment. When I was arrested in Springfield, the officer was what I consider a model officer. He was courteous. He was solicitous. He helped me get out early. He didn't want to hold me all night, and I give him high credit for his behavior. In Allentown, where George Donnelly was arrested, these were just hoodlums. I mean, six of them threw him to the ground and assaulted him. I mean, it was just disgusting. I mean, they were just plain criminals. I've been to 15 courthouses, and most of the other courthouses, they've come out and told me to go away, and when I won't, they just back off. So that in most courthouses, once I refuse, they leave me alone.
When you get into the ambulance.
Okay, well, when I get into the ambulance, they start in. I don't talk or say anything. So they have a method of pushing on your chest, driving their knuckles into your chest, which is quite painful and which wakes capillaries. And I've had for pain there for as long as 4 days afterwards.
Okay, wait. You're laying on, they put you on a gurney, you're in the ambulance, and some guy's just got his fist on your chest pushing down.
Yeah, several times.
Why?
They do it. And this is quite painful, actually.
Why?
And it does does break capillaries and leaves mark. I mean, they're black and blue, and it's painful for days.
Why do they do
your
it?
Fingers.
They go, he's having a heart
attack. They're trying to get me to talk. And then they pinch my fingers. Last time when I was in the hospital in Springfield, I ran a plug up my nose, up my left nostril, which turns out is extremely painful. And left it there. And this was a very painful experience.
So they're just torturing you.
Yeah, and then I say when they get me into the psychiatry wards, they always throw me down, give me a shot against my wishes, and knocks me out. And then I'm asleep for several hours, and I don't know what they do.
Well, you know the thing, you're not talking, you're not resisting, you're not doing anything, so they're going to give you a shot anyway?
Well, they give me, yeah. They do.
But now what relationship?
It happened to me at Bellevue twice.
Now, what relationship does Bellevue and the local police department and so on have to do with Homeland Security and the federal court building? What jurisdiction?
Well, it's not the local police department. Remember, I'm on federal property.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Who's arresting you? The Homeland Security?
Yes, Homeland Security.
So they have the power to arrest you. They have the power to arrest you and put you in an ambulance to send you to Bellevue, which is what? A municipal, a state, a city?
Right. Okay.
Yeah, see, I'm wondering where jurisdictions are here.
They call the fire department. The ambulance comes from the fire department. It's the New York City Fire Department, who's actually in my lawsuit. And then they take me to one of these hospitals, of which Bellevue is, I think, a city hospital. Then there was St. Vincent's Hospital, which was a Catholic hospital. Then there's the New York Downtown Hospital, which I guess is also another city hospital. I'm not sure.
You know,
hospitals I've been into in New York City.
You know, the one thing that I always try and make clear to the audience, and I've been an activist since 88. I've been doing this 22 years. So I've been there, done that, had my share of arrest. But I'm telling you, the one thing that I always wanted to make sure that we knew where we were in this police state. I mean, it's like, can we hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave? Well, we're here. Hopefully we can leave. Or at least know we should. What happens is that I just want to know when we're not allowed to dissent, when we're not allowed to complain, when we're not allowed to just go limp and say, hey, man, you want to arrest me? Let's go to court and we'll get this all adjudicated. We'll get it all discussed. We'll get it all taken care of. When I'm not allowed to complain, I need to know that. And it looks like you're getting the information for me is like that you're not allowed to complain. And I'm wondering now how far are we in these cases? Because if they let you out, you're just going right back doing it again. You know, are they amping it up? Are you a three-time offender for passing out paper? I mean, you know, what are the charges now?
All right. First of all, let me tell you one other thing. In the 11 arrests that I've had by federal agents, I've never once been advised of my right to remain silent. Of course, in my case, I exercise it anyway, but never once. And in fact, they ask a lot of questions, which I don't answer, but they've never notified me that I had the right to remain silent.
Why do you think that is?
Because they don't want you to know that. Right. They're trying to get information out of you.
Well, what information are you giving me? What who did you get the printing from? I mean, what do they want to know?
They want my name, they want my address. I don't carry any identification when I go on these things.
Well, they know who you are. They just want you to kiss the ring.
Now they know who I am, but when I first showed up, they didn't.
You know, they just want you to kiss the ring. You know, so now even though they do know who you are they still, trying to get you to talk?
Well, now that I've been so many times in Manhattan, they don't bother with that anymore.
Right.
They just place me under arrest, and they handcuff me, search all my stuff, take away all my belongings. And last time, they didn't even give me a receipt. I'm having trouble getting my belongings back. In fact, I've just written a letter to the judge asking him to place an order on the police to return my belongings. The police won't do it. They say you've got to have a receipt, but they didn't give me a receipt. So that my belongings are now stuck in the police department. This includes my cell phone, my car keys, and other incidental stuff, including my pants and my sweater and my sneakers and my shoelaces and my belt, and
yeah, it's punitive.
Strip me.
It's punitive. They just want to punish you.
Yeah. It's strictly punitive.
So this is, I mean, what kind of charges are you facing now that you're a repeat offender? I mean, is there like, you know, the 38th time that you passed out flyers, death penalty or something? I mean, you know, where are they going with this?
No, okay. So I get the citations. I don't pay them, and I don't show up to court. For the fact I notified the district magistrate that I wouldn't show up to court, that I consider these unconstitutional arrests. So what they did is they got a warrant for my arrest because I didn't pay the fines. And that's when they arrested me the last time was on the warrant. So I'm charged with failing to either pay the fines or show up in court. And at the moment, I've got a hearing on July 20th to go and plead in this case. And at the moment, I'm not sure whether this is just another citation, like another parking ticket, or whether this is actually a misdemeanor. And it makes a difference, because if it's a misdemeanor, that means they could put you to prison. And it also means that I'm entitled to a jury trial, which I'm going to ask for. Now, if it's just another citation, I'm probably not entitled to a jury trial.
Well, this is, I tell you, you know, I'm sure you probably already know this, but I mean, here in Arizona, the state constitution says any crime for which you can go to jail for, you get a trial by jury. But they don't
That's
do
right.
it.
The
but
US
they don't
constitution
do it.
Says that.
But they don't do it.
But if this isn't something that they could send me to jail for, I mean, for example, if you get a parking ticket, okay, and you don't want to pay the fine, I mean, you can't get a jury trial. You can get a trial in front of a judge, but you can't get a jury trial because it's not considered a crime. It's considered a regulation.
Okay,
a crime means a misdemeanor or a felony, something for which there is a possible jail sentence.
Okay, this is my point. Here in Arizona, when you have a crime that you are
just
it's perfectly clear you are entitled to a jury. They have ruled no. You're not going to get one unless it's a sentence over 6 months. So what they do is they give you a sentence of 5 months and 29 days and then have another one right after it, and they'll keep you in for a couple of years, but you never got a jury trial. Then, on top of that, Mark Victor, my partner in the Freedom Summit that we do, he's a criminal defense attorney, he's gotten to the point that he doesn't trust juries anymore. He's like, you didn't prove his innocence kind of thing. And he's like, man, it's getting bad. The people are just so, and the voir dire is just getting anybody that has any kind of mind of their own, God forbid that they understand what fully informed jury means, they're gone. So what happens, he goes, you know, we're waiving right to jury. He goes, well, I got to check with the prosecutor. He's like, what? Yeah. The prosecutor also has a right in Arizona to demand a jury trial. They want the jury sometimes. And I'm going, holy moly, this whole thing has gotten so screwed up.
That's right. Now, in New York State, the state law, I understand that unless you have a possible sentence of 6 months, they won't give you a jury trial either. But that's unconstitutional.
Yeah, along with a whole bunch of other stuff.
The U.S. Constitution says if you're accused of any crime, it means a prisonable offense, you're entitled to a jury trial. And I'll fight that also. Now, this is a New York State situation. This is a federal situation. And I'm not sure how the feds handle it.
But we're going to find out when we come back in the next hour, Julian.
But I'm going to demand a jury trial if, in fact, this is a punishment, you know, of the feds.
I understand. We're going to talk about it more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with Julian Heiklin, challenging the man in his late 70s because somebody has to. We're going to hear more from Julian in just a little bit.